Okay, so she's on.
Well, I want to thank Stephen, the board, Board of Adjustment. This afternoon, I am Supervisor Lisa Heddens, and my understanding today is Karen's last.
My last one.
Board meeting. And I'm here, want to thank you for your service that you've done to the county. I know you've served here 1 year, or one term, which is 5 years, and that's quite a commitment to provide to the county. And I want to thank you on behalf of my colleagues for your commitment. I know from conversations of talking to Jerry, I know you've been an integral part of the Board of Adjustment, the questions you've asked of the staff, just the consideration of ordinances and other applicants. I know it's a big job. And so I'm here to present to you with just a recognition and token of our appreciation. Say thank you for your years of service. Certainly does not go unnoticed. Certainly appreciate all that you've done, and I'm sure you'll be sorely missed on the Board of Adjustment. But just thank you so much for all that you have provided to our community. We certainly can't do all of our work without volunteers like yourself or anyone else that is up here. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Oops, sorry.
He told her she could come back.
Yeah. You know, I just might sometime.
Now let's get back to Disney.
All right. On that note, we'll call the meeting to order. It's a little after 4. Roll call vote. All those in attendance.
McGill.
Here.
Brecky.
Here.
Neubauer.
Here.
Youngberg.
Here.
Schneider.
Here.
Okay, board. In front of you, you have the agenda for today's meeting. Do I hear any additions or subtractions to the agenda? Okay. By the way, I'd like to welcome Wendy to the board, our newest board member. We're going to be losing Karen. So welcome to the group. Okay. Anyway, as I said, any additions or subtractions to the agenda? If not hearing none, then the agenda will stay as presented. Just a little bit to give you an idea on how the meeting is going to go tonight. If you have come, we'd appreciate it if you would sign in as you get in the door. If you want to make any comments this afternoon, please approach the agenda. Make sure you state your name, address, so we've got it for the record. The way this will work is we will go through, we'll take a look at our minutes here, get their approval there. Then after that's done, a couple other housekeeping issues, then we'll ask for any public comments on any of the issues that we have that have been before the board that are not on today's agenda. We'll take that into consideration. If there are none, then we'll move on to our CUP requests, and we will deliberate on them. And that's, again, if you have comments, we will let the staff present their give their presentation. Any comments from the presenter, rebuttals back and forth. Please try to keep your comments, if you have any, to 10 minutes at a minimum. And like I said, if you have any, make sure you state your name and you approach the podium. Moving on from there, taking a look, we have the minutes from our previous meeting of October 16th in front of you. Do I hear any changes to the minutes? If not, I'll entertain a motion to accept the minutes.
So moved.
Seconded.
Motion and second. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Okay, that brings us down to also in front of us, we had issue in front of us, the last one. We always look at the findings of fact from the previous meeting on that. That was CUP 0319.1, the Perkins PDF. Do I hear any changes to the findings of fact? If not, I'll entertain a motion to approve the findings of fact.
So moved.
Seconded.
Motion and second. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Moving on, we'll move into our public comments. As I said, any comments from the public, again, on any of the issues that we've had before the board that are not being considered at tonight's meeting? Hearing none, we'll move forward. We've got a couple other things. Election of officers for our 2020 calendar year. So I will accept any nominations for chairman for the coming year.
I nominate Steve for chairman.
I don't really want to accept that one, but that's okay. Do I hear a second?
I'll second that.
Motion and second. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Vice chair. We have to have a vice chair in case I am not here. Do I hear a motion?
I would like to nominate Randy.
Motion on the floor. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Motion and second. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Sorry. Opposed? Same sign. Motion carries. Congratulations, Randy. Okay. Also in front of you, I believe we have our meeting schedule for 2020. Any comments on that, board? Jerry, any comments from the staff on that at all?
I don't have anything to add.
Okay.
Just questions about it.
All right.
It's the same old, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Do we need a motion on that?
Yes, you do.
Okay.
It would be the third Wednesday of the month.
Okay.
Motion to accept the meeting schedule for 2020.
I'll second.
Motion and second. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Same sign. Motion carries. Okay. Rules of procedure, Jerry.
Yes. When the Board of Supervisors, this time through, when they were reviewing candidates and looking at the process for Planning and Zoning Commission and Board of Adjustment, we realized that the current rules of procedure did not contain the language that addresses, that talks about the total number of members that are required, where a majority of those members are to reside, and then the length of the terms. This information is covered in Chapter 92.01, Sub 1 of the Story County Land Development Regulations, but it's not in the Rules of Procedure. So we are asking the Board of Adjustment to adopt this amendment. It takes a majority of the board to support any change to the Rules of Procedure. This item has been reviewed by the County Attorney's Office, and they support this information being a part of the Rules of Procedure.
Okay. Since we are changing the Rules of Procedure, like I said, I will accept a motion, then I think I'll call for a roll call vote, just so we've got it down on the record. So I look for a motion.
So moved.
Second?
Seconded.
Motion and second. Roll call vote, please.
Youngberg.
Aye.
Schneider.
Aye.
Neubauer.
Aye.
Brekke.
Aye.
McGill.
Aye. Motion carries. All right, now we're going down into our hearings. I believe before us we've got CUP 0290.6, Martin Marietta Ames Mine Slurry Drops.
Yep. So this is the slurry drops and then the addition of off-site storage for rescue equipment to the Martin Marietta Ames Mine. The mine itself is located on Riverside Road. And then the off-site location for the equipment storage will be on North Dayton, just north of USDA near the Ames Mine. The zoning is A1 agricultural on these properties and greenbelt conservation, and mining is a permitted use through a conditional use permit in both of these zoning districts. Martin Marietta has been at this site since the early 1950s, so that was before we even had zoning in Story County. They have been through several amendments to their conditional use permit One most recently was in 2016. I think a few of you might remember that one. So with that one, they constructed a new employee building. And there was a drop for fuel oil as well. With that conditional use permit, and why it's relevant for your consideration tonight, is that we adopted a comprehensive conditional use permit boundary. So having Martin Marietta been there since the 1950s, there were a few areas with legal non-conforming uses, and other areas where there had been a variety of different conditional use permits. So we put everything into one comprehensive boundary with that conditional use permit. There are also several conditions with that permit, including that they planted an acre of prairie north of the employee building and did seal coating on an employee drive. They have since done an insignificant modification to bring that boundary back in because they moved the location of the fuel drop. And that was an insignificant modification that was administratively approved. The fuel drop is now just north of the employee building. So this is a map of the vicinity, and then one where I'm trying to show the conditional use permit boundary a little bit clearer without aerial imagery. So this star is the approximate location of the slurry drops. So it's north of this processing area. And then this star is the location of the off-site rescue equipment storage. So you're just to the southeast, about a mile from the mine. And again, we're on North Dayton Avenue and East Riverside Road. And this is the current conditional use permit boundary. So that boundary includes the employee access road to North Dayton Avenue, which is this little arm that sticks out to the east. And then it also includes, you know, this processing area. The subject properties where the slurry drops are proposed to be located are to the northeast, so they're shaded in gray on this map. And then again, the subject property where there's an existing utility building to be used for the rescue equipment is located here on North Dayton Avenue. Regarding the slurry drops, so currently slurry is being dropped underground where it settles out. So that they may reuse the wash water that they use in the processing of the limestone that's mined. So the underground area where the slurry is dropped is a mined out area. This provides a storage solution for the slurry, the fines that are left as well. So instead of having them elsewhere, they're below ground in the mined out areas. The main change why you have a conditional use permit for this tonight is that instead of being pumped underground straight from the processing plant into an underground pipe, the pipe will now be above ground. So the pipe that carries the slurry will now be above ground and run north rather than running underground, and that's because the mined out area has become full, and so the pipe doesn't fit underground anymore. So now it'll be above ground, and the drops will be, there will be four drops that will be used in sequential order from north to south to backfill that underground mined area. Each one will be used for 1 to 2 years. So they'll start with the first slurry drop, use that for 1 to 2 years. Then they will cap it and revegetate the area and then use the next slurry drop. So slurry drop 2 for 1 to 2 years, then slurry drop 3 for 1 to 2 years, and then slurry drop 4. And then there is a drive that provides access to the slurry drop so they can inspect the pipe daily. That will also, it's made of gravel, they will bring up that gravel when they're done using it and revegetate that area as well. The above ground pipe is 16 inches in diameter, and again, it will connect to these drops in the ground that are also about 16 inches in diameter. I have photos of it to show you guys, but here's a map. So slurry drop 1 is the northernmost drop. It's located on a separate parcel. The northern boundary of the parcel is adjacent to the South Skunk River. There's no work proposed in the floodplain area. due to the proximity to the river here, we are recommending a condition that there's additional spill protection measures taken near this drop. Slurry drops 2 and 3 are located on the same parcel, but again, they will be used in sequential order. So 2 first and then 3. Slurry drop 2 is 865 feet about from the nearest external property line. Slurry drop 3 is closer. It's about 50 feet from the nearest external property. So again, we are recommending as a condition additional spill protection measures around that drop. Slurry drop 4 is closer to the processing area of the mine, and that drop will be the last to be used. Again, the only traffic that this is going to generate is daily inspections along this yellow line, which is the road, to ensure there's no leaks or other issues with these drops and the pipe. This is the off-site rescue storage equipment parcel. So there's 1, 2, 3 accessory structures on the site. The northeasternmost 40 by 61 is what is used by Martin Marietta for the off-site equipment storage. The off-site location is desirable in case of an emergency to provide better access. This also serves other mines in central Iowa and is the backup location for mines in other states. The rescue team may visit this location once or twice a month for maintenance and to get the access for training, get access for training purposes with the equipment. I will just note that we learned of this use through a complaint about the property. The other structures are currently used for a snow removal and yard mowing business. The south building is in agricultural use, but that business use will be ending by the end of the year. It's not a permitted use on the property, but we are working with them to move that out of there. Gain access to the buildings as part of that complaint, and noted that Martin Marietta had the emergency equipment in that building, so we said we should include that in the conditional use permit. But the conditional use permit is just for that 40 by 60 building. There's no outside storage. They're not planning any other activities on this property. Looking at the surrounding land use with the slurry drops, we did discuss this South Skunk River's proximity to the northernmost drop. There is, a residential area in this country estates subdivision adjacent to the east and off of Dayton Parkway and Dayton Ridge Road. There are several dwellings there as well. The closest dwellings to Slurry Drop 1 are about 900 feet from the drop in the pipe itself. The closest dwelling to Drops 3 and 4 isn't adjacent, but it is about 1,000 feet from those drops. It's located here off of Dayton Parkway. But other adjacent properties include those owned by Bishop Farms and E.I. Sargent and Associates, who are the owners of the land the mine is located on. And those parcels are adjacent to the Skunk River Greenbelt, but they do have a larger buffer in between the drops and the river. Do you have a question?
Is this the appropriate time to ask what, when you say protective measures?
Yep.
What are they?
So we've been discussing these with the applicant. They have an environmental engineer that's going to work to better develop them. But what's been suggested is potentially pressure drop alarms, or a silt fence or other berm.
What happens to the quality of the skunk if an alarm is it, mm-hmm. thousands and thousands of pounds could be dumped into the skunk.
I think it might take, I asked the applicant about that, and they could probably better speak to that. Maybe we should wait.
Wait on
yes.
that?
Okay.
Let's get through. Finish and then we'll...
Okay. The properties are located in the Ames Urban Fringe Plan, which is an area outside of Ames, 2 miles, where we've worked with them on the future land use. They're designated agricultural and subsurface mining. So these are areas where we are to protect agricultural resources, and also note that these areas have been impacted by underground mining. So such uses as residential development on these parcels where there's underground mining occurring or commercial development would not be compatible. And there's also natural areas on the property with the slurry drops. There were several trees impacted by the construction of the road. However, they did not trigger our mitigation requirements. We have a 15% threshold to where mitigation of trees would be required. They did not trigger that. And again, they will be revegetating the area, which is mainly in CRP. It's been taken out of agriculture production and put in CRP. So this is the utility building and just a picture of the equipment trailer inside of it. Here's the other structures on the property. They're also agricultural buildings. This is slurry drop, and I think I skipped one. Slurry drop 2 and 3. So you can see.
1 and 2.
1 and 2, I'm sorry. They've been installed. So they are these little pipes that come out of the ground, basically. They're drilled much like a well. There's casing inside of them. They go down to about 180 feet in depth to reach the mined out area below. And then this is more location, the photos of the road that leads to the slurry drop. And slurry drops 4 location. It hasn't been drilled yet, but this is the general vicinity. And this is a picture of the pipe. It's that will be used to pipe the slurry from the processing plant to the drops. Okay, so the board considers standards of approval, and I'll start with compatibility. So the main changes in the use is not the fact that slurry is being dropped underground, it's that now it will just be a piped above ground to be dropped underground. There's no new proposed pumps. There is an existing pump that will be used that's located at the processing plant. There's no surface processing proposed to be moved to these locations. There's no outdoor storage of the rescue equipment. And staff is recommending a condition that the conditional use permit for the slurry drops expires after each drop's use ceases. So that you won't have these parcels included in the conditional use boundary past their use for the slurry drops. Regarding transition, the closest drop to an external property line has a 50-foot setback from that property. That drop is over 1,000 feet from any dwelling, and the northern drop also has a smaller setback. It's 350 feet from the north external property line, which is this, adjacent to the Skunk River. Again, we can discuss this more with the applicant, but staff's recommending a condition that there's additional protective measures taken around these drops and pipes. The drops are screened by forested areas adjacent to the Skunk River, and then with the off-site storage of rescue equipment, that's inside of that steel utility building, so it's really similar in look to other agricultural buildings in the area. You wouldn't know it's being used for that use if you drove by. So no additional buffer is needed for that property. Regarding traffic, traffic will likely continue at similar levels. This isn't increasing production or impacting production. They will have daily drive-bys and inspections of the slurry drops and more monthly access to the rescue equipment. So no major impact on traffic is proposed, and there's no parking or signs and lighting proposed. Regarding environmental protection, again, the main change in this conditional use permit is having an above ground pipe, and so with that there are additional recommended conditions given the potential for a leak from that pipe of slurry. Again, the slurry is currently being dropped into the mine, the applicant indicated that the slurry is dropped into the Gilmore City level of the mine, and because it is an existing mined out area, the slurry stays within that horizon of the mine. It doesn't leak into, you know, groundwater or create issues that way. And there's no environmental impacts anticipated from the storage of the rescue equipment and trailer. If the board concludes that all development criteria will be met, it shall approve the application unless it concludes that there's a strong probability the development will not adequately safeguard health, safety, and general welfare of persons residing in or working in adjoining surrounding properties, impair adequate supply of light and air, unduly congest roads, or create hazard from flood or fire, diminish or impair established property values, and not be in accord with the intent, purpose, and spirit of the future land use plans or our ordinance. Just a few notes on these. Again, no processing is going to be occurring in these areas. There wouldn't be any impact on light and air. There's no change in traffic levels. The assessor had no comments. On this proposal, we did route this to them. In addition, Story County Engineer did not have any comments. The Environmental Health Department previously, when they did the fuel drop, worked with the Department of Natural Resources to determine that that was not considered a well and did not require a well permit. So they had no comments. The act of drilling the pipe into the ground did not require a well permit. And Story County Conservation has Peterson Park, which is just north of Slurry Drop 1 across the Skunk River. So they initially suggested that potentially a berm or other protective measure was needed by that drop to protect the South Skunk River there. We sent notice on December 11th to surrounding property owners within a quarter mile. Prior to sending notice, we did receive one call from a neighbor to the west who lives across the Skunk River who noticed the road being constructed. And they did not express opposition or support for the application. They were just curious what was going on. And then one property owner did contact the department in opposition with concerns about noise from the pump, the expansion of the boundary for the conditional use permit, and concerns about groundwater. We also routed this to Ames and Gilbert as cities within 2 miles, and Ames responded that they did not have any comments. These are points to consider. I think we've gone through most of them, but again, it's backfilling of the mine with slurry, which is currently happening, and use of a 40 by 60 utility building for the storage of rescue equipment. And we do recommend conditions that there's additional spill protection measures, such as a berm, a silt fence. I guess we'd like to work with the applicant's environmental engineer to come up with the best solution for the pumps that are the drops that are nearest to the property lines. So that's what's recommended as a condition. And then the driveway has already been constructed, and the natural areas that were impacted, the CRP land, will be revegetated after the slurry drop use ceases and the drive gravel will be taken away, and then that revegetation will occur. We are also recommending a condition. Well, we can just get on to the recommendation. So the Board of Adjustment Alternatives include supporting the request as submitted, supporting it with conditions, which is what staff is recommending, denying the conditional use permit as submitted, or remanding it for additional information. Again, staff is recommending approval with conditions. The conditions would include that all previous conditions of their conditional use permit from 1990 are maintained, so that would include conditions on noise levels. When the use of the slurry drop ceases, they shall be plugged and the driveway removed. The impacted areas shall then be revegetated. The conditional use permit for the slurry drops, including the boundary around the properties with the drop, shall expire as follows, unless they apply for subsequent modifications, and those are approved by the board. So slurry drop 1 would expire in January 1st, 2022. Drops 3 and 4, because they are, drops 2 and 3, I'm sorry, because they are on the same parcel. Those would expire in 2026, so the first one, 2, will be used for 2 years, and then 3 will be used for 2 years, and then January 1st, 2028 will be drop 4's expiration date and the expiration of the boundary around that parcel. I will note that I think in your recommended, the staff report that was posted in the recommendations, we initially thought they all operated at the same time, and so that they will all be used for 1 to 2 years, but they're used individually in sequential order. So that did change from the posted staff report. And then additional berming or other measures shall be installed by slurry drop 1 and 3 to provide additional protection to the South Skunk River and adjacent properties. We will require a zoning permit for the 40 by 60 utility building that contains the rescue equipment, because that was approved through an agricultural exemption previously. And then we're also recommending annual inspection of the slurry drops and pipes by planning and development staff to check in on the use of the drops and if they're being revegetated and that sort of thing. So we'd go out every year and make sure that the conditions are being met. With that, I'll take any questions.
Questions for staff?
I got lots for him.
Okay.
Quite all right. Yes.
Good afternoon, Honorable Chair, members of the Board of Adjustment. My name is Neil Grant. I'm the Natural Resources Director for Mark Red Materials Midwest Division. I said this last time, I'll say it again. The staff is very thorough, and they make this part pretty easy, because normally I go through all this, and I'm not going to repeat it. There's a couple things I want to cover. The first, I would like to apologize for our use of the building prematurely. We did not realize that it needed a permit. The owner of that mine rescue shed is also the owner of the mine property. And so when we created a mine rescue team and we wanted to store it nearby, we simply asked them. They're not charging us to put it there. But when there was a subsequent complaint on a subsequent matter that was not pertaining to us, it came about. And so, of course, we readily agreed to come in and get a permit for that. So apologies, we did not realize that we needed that, but we're happy to do so. Similarly, we also learned, my production staff got a little ahead of themselves, and so we have drilled 2 of the holes and then put in some road. Once I learned that, I asked them to stop so we could go through the proper process. So obviously anything we've done thus far has been at our own risk, and if this is not acceptable and it's not approved, we'll have to pull it out. However, hopefully after our explanation and the discussion, you'll find that it's acceptable and we would be allowed to proceed. As it relates to the staff's review and recommendation for conditions of approval, we are in complete agreement with all of them. I think they're all reasonable. As it relates to the question about the protection measures, they say berming or other protection measures. I would prefer not to do berming, since we're doing this is temporary. We're only going to be on that north site, for example, for a year or two. And it'll be quite disruptive to the landscape and to the neighborhood to get up there with earth moving equipment and construct a berm that will somewhat permanently alter the drainage as well, just on the off chance we have, you know, a leak from the pipe. So what we're thinking, and again, I'd like the opportunity to discuss it with our environmental engineer. Unfortunately, given the time of year, he's on vacation. But what we have in mind, if it helps kind of put your mind at ease, what we're thinking is, Amelia mentioned an alarm, and a quick point of clarification, because I have had this conversation with Amelia. Not an alarm. An alarm sounds like it's going to make a lot of noise and disrupt the neighborhood. What we're thinking is actually a pressure sensor on the pipe that detects a pressure drop, and rather than sound an alarm, it cuts the pump. So if we're pumping slurry through the pipe, it detects the pressure drop, it stops the pump so that we don't start pumping it over the ground. That's what we have in mind. She also suggested if there was a leak that led to the pressure drop and cutting the pump, that if something still leaked out, you know, how do we make sure that that never reaches the Skunk River, and maybe that's where the berming would come in. Again, berming is disruptive to the land, to the neighborhood, and it's a very short-term situation. What I'm envisioning there, and again, subject to approval of our environmental engineers, maybe just some silt fence or something that's around the drop itself that would help contain it, and then maybe an additional run closer to the property line, maybe at the edge of the CRP and the timber along, kind of downstream, so that if it ever managed to get that far, it would be contained within silt fence, which is minimally disruptive and easily removed once we're done doing what we're doing. So I think it's a great idea to add some extra protections. We're totally comfortable with that. And I'm confident that between our engineer and staff, we can come up with something that will meet everybody's needs. So if it's okay by the board, we can kind of leave it as it is, which refers it back to our other measures. If you want to be a little more prescriptive, that's fine too. But that's kind of what we have in mind, and I just wanted to make sure you all were aware of that. There were some concerns about the permit boundary, which is reasonable. I think what staff has proposed is that those areas kind of expire over time, and we're completely fine with that. We're not trying to get our foot in the door for future other surface improvements or anything. This is merely to accommodate the slurry drops, which again, we've been doing this, and I think that was covered pretty well, but I'll reiterate. This is really not much of a change at all. We've long taken the slurry underground to recycle our water, but we dropped first and ran horizontally underground, and it's slowly filling up, and it's to the point where we can't get it to the top horizontally, so we're going to go horizontally and then drop so that we can get it to the location for the last little bit. So really the only change is that the pipe that's currently running horizontally underground is going to move to the surface temporarily until these areas are filled, and then we'll likely begin filling other areas of the mine underground farther south. So that's really the only difference. The concerns about water quality, again, I think it's a reasonable concern for someone who maybe doesn't fully understand what we're doing and how we're doing it, and the fact that it's been done this way for years and it hasn't caused any problems thus far. To help everyone explain, I brought some slurry, shook it up when I got here. In about 10 minutes, it had settled out to the bottom. I'll pass it around. We can shake it up again after everyone's seen it, because it's interesting to see it suspended. This is a sample of slurry from Ames Mine. This is a sample of the Gilmore City limestone that forms the containment that it's within. Water can move through this very, very, very slowly, but the rock in the bottom does not. It's essentially a super filter. So water yield, limestone can yield water. It's what forms the aquifer that the water is drawn out of. We've removed the rock. We're simply putting the rock back in the void space. We're not doing anything to contaminate it. We're just crushing big rocks into little rocks. The very littlest rocks have no value. They can't be sold for any economic purpose, so we just simply put it back. We do that because we want to reuse the water, so we settle it out and take the water back out.
So the slurry is simply rock and water. There's no chemicals.
Is it
clean water? Not a salt water,
pH is similar?
Yes. Yes, and there are NPDES permits for discharge. We are not discharging. But when we do discharge, we have water quality standards for pH and for, I guess it's not turbidity, but it's TSS, total suspended solids, which is, I didn't appreciate it. I wanted to be able to see it. Sorry, hold up. So this is not being discharged, but we do have those in place where we do discharge. This is, again, just going back into the mine. We decant the clean water off and keep reusing it to wash the rock. That's how this ends up suspended in the water. We just send it back underground, let it settle out, repeat. And we've been doing it forever. We're not causing water quality or water quantity issues to the wells today. Moving the pipe from horizontally below ground to above ground doesn't really change any of that either. And it's still got to go through this. And not 3 inches, but hundreds or not thousands of feet to reach the other property. So feel free to pass those around, holler if you have questions.
What happens if there's a spill and that cloudy water goes into the skunk? Obviously it'll separate and the water will go downstream, the lime will bed down. So what does that do to the riverbed?
Really, well, we're a really long ways away. And
okay.
How many feet are you? Over 300.
That's
some
not
of
that far.
Some of them
are
considered
far.
What is
the volume
of
your
pumping? Again, with the pressure monitor to kill the pump, we won't be actively pumping. If we spring a leak, I mean, the pump itself, 16 inches, can move a lot,
right.
Obviously. It's unlikely that the pipe is going to just simply split open and just be pumping 16 inches at however many gallons per minute.
Okay, and let's say
pinhole at a junction or something, and that's why we're monitoring daily to make sure we don't see anything that we need to repair. But if something, and this is where staff's concerns came in, if there were a leak and water did start running towards the river, let's just have some secondary protection against that as well, which we're fine with. I think that's a good idea.
Your product is probably not going to break. I'm more worried about either somebody messing with it, somebody accidentally in a truck hitting it, or those kinds of scenarios that you don't. And so I just want to know worst case scenario. What's worst case scenario? So what happens to the fish life with that amount of lime in the river?
Sure.
And plant life in the river and all that, if there's as any.
Obviously, we hope it never gets to the river. If it does, it's going to settle out, and the DNR is going to come calling in around.
Right. But is it going to kill fish are in there?
Or? No. It's just the same. I mean, the sands and gravels and rock that's in the stream and the river, it's the same. So it's not harmful per se.
There's no organic matter in it or something.
No, I'm not worried about that. I'm just worried about lime is rough. Lime is burnt. Can be burning if it's,
Yeah, I mean, it's slightly basic. It can be applied to agricultural fields.
Right.
So also pH.
Right.
Which is why on our NPS permit, we are just trying to monitor the pH to make sure we're not changing the pH of the water body.
I think the pressure thing is a great thing. But what happens if lightning hits something?
Okay.
But you know what I'm saying. Something crazy.
You bet.
Not anticipated.
I think it's reasonable to have some secondary protection as an existing case, and we're fine about that. And if you're comfortable leaving that up for our environmental engineer and the staff to agree upon, I think that's kind of the path we're headed down, but just so you know, what we're thinking of is that pressure system to kill the pump, turn it off so that it doesn't keep going, and then take some additional kind of physical barrier measures. I don't think burning is the best solution, because I think we're going to get complaints about the bulldozer that's out there moving the dirt to build it for something that's really going to be done and gone and moved on.
Temporary and movable structures?
That's where silt fence would come. So silt fence, I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it's used for stormwater and sediment control around construction sites that are where you've got exposed earth to prevent that from ending up in the water. So it's appropriately on topic, if you will. I mean, it's not entirely what it's intended to do, but it would serve very much the same purpose, and it's relatively easy to do, and it's temporary. So we could put it in while this was in place, and we could pull it out without disrupting the CRP ground and changing the drainage of the area, and quite frankly, irritating the neighbors with earth moving equipment.
I have a question about water.
Yeah.
You mentioned that this is just water and limestone, and I think we have the same thing in our staff report. And that there is no contaminant. Now, we also got concerns from property owners that groundwater might be contaminated. And I'm wondering, do you currently have any monitoring system where you're testing the water that you're putting underground to make sure that there are no contaminants?
There's nothing to contaminate it with in our process, I guess. I mean, we have fuel on our site, and we have primary and secondary spill protection for those. Fuel does not come into contact with our water. Mm-hmm. The water comes into contact with urethane screens and the rock. So there's really no opportunity to introduce contaminants. The water and the rock are already there, and we're simply taking them and mechanically crushing the rock, selling it, and recycling the water. There's nothing in our process to introduce contaminants, if that makes any sense. And we do test our discharge water, okay, for example, yeah, and we've never had any contaminants hit on that. Is that
okay?
How often do you do that?
Annually for TSS. I don't think they're the number three. If you're discharging processed water, which we do not, does require monthly. We're not discharging processed water, so that does not apply. So it's typically an annual. Every year, and have been since that NBDS permit requirement came into place.
Are you going to drill all the wells at once?
No, and unfortunately, we've already drilled two. That's before we realized. So two were drilled already. So sorry about that.
My question is, I guess, for the wells that are not in use, are they covered? Or are they secure?
These are not wells.
The hole.
The hole around, yeah, they're back.
Okay.
And the pipe would attach to it. And then once we're done and we remove that, it will be plugged with grout, which is essentially a cement, and then we will revegetate around.
And I don't want to beat a dead horse. I think what I'm hearing from our board is that we're really not having any problem with the piping itself above ground.
Okay.
But I also, I want a definitive statement. What happens when that goes into the river? What is it? It's a pH change for the river. Will it kill the fish or not?
I can't answer that. But
okay.
We will have to work with the DNR.
Okay.
We're talking about a very unlikely scenario.
I agree, but I just, we have
staff, environmental engineers, and of course the DNR has experts. And if there was some sort of emergent situation like that, we're ultimately responsible.
Well,
and,
yeah.
And
but
we'll have to remedy it.
Question I keep you come back to, you haven't had a chance to visit with your environmental engineer on some of these issues, and I think the board in general is concerned about the realm. I don't think they're concerned. You get it in there, you throw in, I would agree, a substantial amount of a foreign material, whether it's rock, whether it is, all of a sudden. I'm wondering if this is something that we'd ought to have a plan before we approve. You know, in other words, I'd be leaning towards tabling this till you've got a chance to visit with your environmental engineer. Our staff has had an opportunity to visit so that we've got a real plan on this is where we're going. And the board's in agreement, DNR's in agreement, everybody's in agreement with it. And it's not so much, I think your pump cutoff is great, but I've also seen some of these that I've had pump cutoffs and I've got this in place and I got that in place. And then all of a sudden something goes out of left field that you don't expect. And I'm not saying you know your business, but I've just seen that happen on different occasions with different things of this nature.
It's called what happens in worst case scenario.
So I guess that's kind of where I am. I don't mean to tip my hand to where I'm sitting, board, but
I would like to see the game plan for the water.
It should be tabled until you can bring back a plan on what you're going to do on this. Yeah.
We're happy to commit to what I've already kind of brainstormed, but if you want more than that,
then it's too up in the air for me.
Well, I would pick it out of the air and commit to it.
No.
That's just, when this issue came up, we've given it some thought, and that's what we've come up with. Again, here's someone else who I was hoping to include in the discussion, but just simply not available.
I understand
we're
that puts you at risk.
Right. To what we've already come up with.
But I think we need a plan, a little bit more definitive. Again, I don't mean to speak for the board. Please.
No, I agree.
And I don't mean to jump ahead.
Yeah, no, I was thinking on a similar note. Not that I don't trust the staff to follow through. Unfortunately, right. If somebody's attending the meeting, if we come back and have a plan, then everybody will hear. Where if we just move on, assuming that plan will take place. It will take place, but it'll be in a different format, so okay. It's a little more difficult.
And I think if you want, I think to protect you, you need this board approval on that, and we're saying we want to hear more game plan.
I have another question.
Yeah, you bet.
So on this emergency response, so what kind of emergencies is this?
If there's an underground mine emergency.
Okay.
So we've got trained teams throughout the country that will respond to underground mine emergencies. And so we have to, under the federal regulations, have them stage within a certain response time of all of our underground mines. And so Ames works well because it's in close proximity to our largest mine. It's within the required distances and time constraints of our other mines. So that's why we like this location.
So this will also serve the Nebraska one as well?
It's backup. So we've got an underground mine in Nebraska, soon to be two. We have two in Kansas City, and we have five or six in Iowa, and some in Indiana, West Virginia. But locally here, this serves the Iowa ones primarily. We have one in Nebraska that serves Nebraska primarily, and one in Kansas City that serves Kansas City primarily. And everybody serves as everybody else's backup. You've got to get somebody there within a certain amount of time, and then if you need more, you can get them there within a longer amount of time. So, but there kind of forms a triangle between Omaha and Ames and Kansas City as it relates, because we've got one in Fort Dodge, for example, that's farther north, which gets it farther away from Des Moines. We could put one in Des Moines and be closer to Kansas City, but that's its secondary response. Its primary response is Ames and Fort Dodge, for example. So having it a little farther north makes a lot of sense. A lot of the folks who serve on the mine rescue team might work at Ames Mine, for example, and would be geographically close for their response time to get to the equipment and get on the road to respond to an emergency. Probably say we've never needed them yet.
Good.
That's good.
But they train frequently and they compete nationally to keep their skills honed, and they won some awards. So certainly appreciate your support on that matter, mm-hmm. and understand your concerns on the water. We're willing to circle the wagons, get the environmental engineer involved, and work with staff, and we can bring something back more comprehensive for your consideration.
I have just an educational question.
Yeah.
Long-term plan. So these are going to be used 2 years each.
Yes.
So then, what are you going to do in 6 years when those are full?
Back underground is different areas of mine.
Oh. Okay.
So basically, you're topping off what you've already used.
Okay. Yeah. All right. How deep is the aquifer?
That's one
of those
tough question to answer because there are superficial aquifers. There are limestone aquifers. And I don't know where their respective wells are and which aquifer they may or may not be in.
Okay. The reason I asked it, I was just wondering, as you say, when water filters in the aquifer, there's lime there. So is this a helpful thing for our, Ames is built on a marsh. So
it's really
is
kind
it
of
helpful? Or?
Well, no, just indifferent. I mean,
okay.
There was rock there.
Right.
We're putting it back.
All right.
Later,
okay.
But
all right.
It's not really helpful or harmful. It's just.
It's there.
Yeah.
It's there. Okay.
It's exactly.
Okay.
Anything else for me?
Question on the distance from the Skunk River. Did you say it's?
Well, it's
300 yards.
From the north hole, which would be the closest one to the Skunk River, it was 3.
And then how often have you had, pipe failures in your underground?
So we pump thousands of tons of material by pipe every day. All of the dredge operations around Central Iowa are using this same process to pump. So we don't have failures because we have redundant systems in place. So how often does it happen underground? Yeah, the underground pipe could be there for years. And so it's hard to say. I mean, we don't have failures that have mass flows of material out because we monitor. But I mean, this is something we do every single day around multiple operations to move material like this.
And that's why I don't think we have a problem with you putting the pipe up.
Yeah, I mean,
I think it's just the worst case scenario situation that we have to protect.
And that's where my question was, the volume of it coming out, because if it's like some fire hoses, the minute you do have something go down, man, you can pump a lot of stuff real quick,
mm-hmm.
but if it's a slower pump, when it goes down, Catching that 300 feet may and so be a long way.
And so we do things that, so every year this pipe is rotated, so you're not rubbing the same side of the pipe and all that, and after two or three cycles, it's just replaced. So we don't have that problem, because we don't, you're moving 5,000 or 6,000 gallons of water a minute. So, catastrophic blowout, you're pumping a lot of water.
You're pumping a lot of water.
So we don't allow it to ever get to that point. I guess negligence would allow that to just bust. Yeah. We don't ever have that because we monitor, move it annually, and then replace it. So
100 yards isn't too far, but let's just say you had the alarm didn't go off and it burst for whatever reason, or somebody hit it and whatever. So in essence, the weight of this probably is going to hit the ground before it hit the
before it gets to the river.
The water will get to the river, but maybe the limestone.
And the vegetation, all the ground. I mean, there's a lot of.
I mean, it'll catch some of it. It probably wouldn't catch all of it.
Usually, one of the it's called a BMV or best management practice for release of storm water, process water, that if it ever overtops. Like a settling pond that has to flow through a vegetated buffer to filter it out before it ever reaches the waterway. So we've got considerably greater buffer strips in place here. I mean, it might be 50 feet, and now we've got 350, for example. Plus, well, I guess that's not all CRP. Some of that's timber beyond the CRP. So there's a lot of vegetation between the most northern end of the pipe, which, I mean, it could break. If it broke, it could be on the most northern end, but it could be anywhere back, which is just farther and farther away. There's a lot of ground and a lot of vegetation between the river and this pipe that would filter it.
We just need to protect that water.
Absolutely. And we're
so,
willing to go back and come up with more definitive way to do that.
I think the board, like I said, I think where we're leaning board is to table this and
We need a motion.
Input from the public, since this is a public hearing.
Well, I will, but I'm I was just saying before I went that direction. So, anyway, like I was saying, that's kind of where we're leaning at this point in time.
Do you need a motion?
No, not yet.
Okay.
We'll wait until the public has something to say. Comments from the public? Yes, sir.
I'm Jerry Sloan, 5105 North Dayton Avenue. I have a home that's east of that slurry drop 4 near Dayton Avenue. And I actually have some questions more than I have comments, because one of them had to do with what you're asking, is if there is, especially up there at drop number 1. I realize 300 feet sounds like a long way, but it's kind of downhill to the river. It's not as though it has to go over an incline. That property slopes all into the river. And I wasn't going to comment on that, but when you guys brought it up, I think it's a great question. My concern has to do more with the location of the pumps relative to where they are now. One of the things, and I don't think any of you live near the quarry, but one of those things that we that do live near the quarry have to endure is a lot of noise. And there are some great days, like today was a great day. The quarry wasn't too noisy, but there are other times it's incredibly noisy. And one of my concerns is will these pumps be located where they're currently located? And I don't know whether I hear pump noise or not, because there's just this din of noise sometimes. So it looks like a head shake says they're going to stay where they are.
Yeah, so the processing all takes place here, and the pump that we've used in the past is there and would be used in the future here. We are not bringing pumps out to the drops. It's pumped from the plant through the pipe to the drop, and then it just falls gravity through the drop. So yes, we're not taking pumps out closer to folks.
How about bumping or vibrations from the surface pipes? Is this a piston pipe pump, or is this a
turbine?
turbine-type pump. And one of the concerns I have is the either vibration. I mean, it's a huge amount of water, 5,000 to 6,000 gallons a minute. And that kind of volume moving through pipes, my concern is as a nearby, and then the folks up at Country Estates are going to be there, and the folks up just north of me, if there's vibration or thumping sounds that would be transmitted at the surface level that wouldn't be heard below ground, I think that's a big concern I have.
Most of the time, to my experience, so when I'm at a plant and we're pumping this volume of material, I've got to lay my hand on the pipe to even know that there's anything going through it. There's no sound.
Okay.
15 feet away from it, you would never hear it. I have to physically put my hand on it because to verify that material's moving. I mean, it's an SDR 17 or 11 pipe.
A lot of water.
It's a lot. I mean, it does sound like a lot of volume of water, but it's that pipe is so thick.
With the limestone in it.
How thick is the pipe?
It's, you know, it's an SDR 11.
15 inches.
I mean, how many?
The thickness.
The thickness?
The thickness. I mean, is it
half inch and a half? I mean, it's a thick wall pipe, you know, obviously for erosion protection.
Okay.
But there won't be any vibration or anything.
Sound? Are you saying there's no sound?
No sound that you would hear after 5 feet away from that pipe. I mean, I don't know that you'd hear it beside it. I mean, It's very quiet process. And the pump is an electric pump, so it's not an air piston pushing something like that. It's a continually centrifugal force pump, so it's just continually running and electrically moving this water. So there is no noise really associated with that as well. There's an electric motor hooked to it, but it sets at the plant location. So
good to hear you're not going to relocate the pump. No. I wouldn't have some concerns about increased noise from that. The other thing is, how many gallons of diesel fuel do you guys use a year in the mine?
Oh, goodness.
And we say there's this material, this water that's being used is clean. There are thousands of gallons of diesel fuel used a year in the mine. There's how many tons of ammonium nitrate fertilizer that's used for explosive purposes? This stuff ends up on this rock. It's not virgin rock. It's got diesel fumes. It's got ammonium nitrate that's been used during the mining process. And my question is, do you ever test this material for organics or for nitrates that you're in your slurry pits?
And, you know, so that you're correct in saying that is a mixture, but when that ignites, it combusts itself, so that doesn't exist any longer. Yeah, I mean, when that explosive process happens, it goes off and turns into a gas which expands and breaks the rock and then dissipates out through the air of the mining ventilation system. So there's not a residue left on this material.
I mean, the diesel is put into tanks that have double walls and often even tertiary.
I'm just thinking in the engines, there's smoke and stuff that comes up. I just think from a due diligence standpoint, it might be wise to test that stuff to see whether or not you're pumping contaminated water into the ground. And the other question I have, and I don't worry because my water comes from Marshalltown and Newton through the rural water system, but we got a community of 50,000 people less than 5 miles away that has an aquifer that is interconnected with the underground rock system. And I know solid limestone is pretty impervious, but as you guys know probably far better than I, that there are fractures in limestone that caused water to move through it. In fact, when you used to drill a well in the limestone, that's what you had to hit to get water, was some of those fissures to fill up. And so just from a due diligence standpoint, it seemed like you should be testing the water that you're pumping into the ground. And you ought to do some testing to make sure there's no interconnectivity between the area you're pumping into and a nearby aquifer that's feeding an entire city. And I just wonder if all of this shouldn't be looked at as part of this
I think
process.
Some of that, the Iowa DNR falls under, it falls outside of our jurisdiction here.
I'm just thinking of them as a company that could potentially, mining companies have a tendency to do things fast and dirty.
I don't know that I would agree with that. I mean, certain companies around the country do, but not this one. I mean, obviously I represent this one, and this is my facility, has been for the last 6.5 years. We don't do things to intentionally or unintentionally. So, I mean,
but the folks in West Virginia didn't either, and the folks in the copper mines out west didn't either. But years later, we find out what the downside of some of their practices have been.
Can I just say something from right here, please?
Let's let Mr. Sloan finish, and then you can.
I'll be down here in just a second. I want to make sure. That's it. Thank you so much for allowing me to.
Thank you, sir.
Just really quick. I'm here for a different reason for my own variance, but it's interesting that this was my grandpa's old mine. Can Cook's Quarry.
Name, please?
Andy Craig.
Okay, Andy.
I'm a professionally licensed civil engineer and environmental engineer, so it's kind of interesting to me. I think your further measures, I think it would be really nice if you guys had in your pocket just a chemical makeup of that slurry. You could just refer to it in
water.
Yeah, but you don't have any tests to show that. So. You know, tailings from mines can have a lot of contaminants in them, and if you just had proof of it, they would jump, they'd be just off your back.
Tailings from certain sort of mines, these aren't metal mines or coal mines. I mean, this isn't, we're not introducing a chemical like a metal mine would in the process.
It should be easier if you had a GCFID or liquid chromatography or something that showed that. And that's pretty much it. On your side, like, it would take a simple calculation for a catastrophic failure, the flow rate and the response time to see what kind of mass load that would potentially introduce to the landscape. But, you know, on your side of the thing, I mean, it doesn't remain in a pipe if it does spill and it would spread out, lose energy. It wouldn't make it to the river. I can tell you that offhand. So you'd basically have a pile of fine limestone pretty close to the pipe where it broke.
Okay.
That's about it.
Thank you.
All good points.
Thank you.
My name is Liz Keel. I live at 2017 Dayton Parkway. And if I could have the slide which showed where the last one you took up, where the number 4 drops, where all the drops are at. This is my property line right here. I have a fruit garden there, and I have a garden there that supplies food for 5 families. So if, and I didn't know that this was going to be 50 feet from my property line. I watched these guys and listened to them tear down all these trees this fall or this spring or this summer, put in the road, just mangle the west side of my sight line, and now I find out they didn't even have a permit to do this. I figured they did, or I would have, the minute I saw all this machinery coming out there just kind of destroying that property, I would have said something, but I assumed they knew what they were doing and they got their permits. So that was kind of a shock to me. We have that field is wide open, and I chase off hunters that come in their pickup trucks on that land more than 1 or 2 times a year. So if a pickup truck and a hunter goes out there and hits one of those pipes, I didn't realize they were above ground, and I didn't realize there were 4 of them, that would be an issue if they don't see them. And I don't know how they get out there. Maybe these hunters are permissioned by the company or whatever. No?
For the property owner. We do not own the property. We lease it. And the property owner.
So who's out there hunting them?
It would either be the property owner or someone with permission from the property owner.
Okay.
And there's only one pipe. It's going to be in four different locations over time. You suggested there were four pipes. I just wanted to clarify for everybody. There's one pipe.
One pipe.
It runs to drop one. When drop one's full, okay, it'll be diverted and run to drop two, diverted to three, and then four.
So like when pipe one is done, are you pulling up the pipe and removing it?
Yeah. Okay. And restoring and capping,
restoring
capping
the land.
The drop,
yes.
Okay. Pulling back the road, all of that.
All right.
It'll all be restored.
But this is going to happen for 8 years.
Two.
2 years to one. 1 to 2 years for number one, just depends on how quick it fills up. 1 to 2 years for number two, 1 to 2 years for number three.
And I think it's kind of funny how he says he doesn't want alarms that will disrupt the neighborhood. I cannot lay in bed and not hear some kind of vibration or fan running. And it may be way down 15 stories deep, but I can hear that fan running. And the constant dynamiting or whatever they do, explosions, and the constant alarms from the trucks. I can't even camp a weekend out in my woods with my grandchildren because we can't sleep out there or even enjoy it out there. And to have just more things come through there with all these machineries, it's overwhelming. And I moved out there for the quietness.
How long have you been there?
Pardon?
How long have you lived there?
29 years. And when I moved out there, there was a barn with some cows. And his mind has just moved more closer and closer to me constantly. So we got the road in there, and then we got something else in there, and then we got the building in there. Now we're doing this, and now they're tearing down all those trees, and they're just going in there with all this machinery, and it's just scary. Me. That's it. I just wanted a line.
Thank you. Okay, board. Like I said, my recommendation is I think we need more information. You need to visit with the environmental engineer. We need to get some of that. We need a more definitive plan. I don't like to table things because we like to give people a direction to go here because they've got plans and things they want to do, but at the same time, we have a responsibility that
due diligence.
We have to have a plan in place. So
just for clarity, we're talking about protective measures for the piping in addition to like emergency planning.
In case there's a spill,
I would say a breach. Protective measures in case there's a breach, at least to protect the river.
So this might be in place already, as far as emergency plans that the company might have in place.
Yeah, we've got they're called SPCC, spill prevention, control, and countermeasure plans. They're primarily with regard to petroleum products. We've also got stormwater pollution prevention plans, which are, again, with regards to stormwater. A lot of the pieces of those plans might apply to the situation, but it is a little bit different. And, again, that's why we were absolutely willing to do what staff was asking. And hearing your concerns, I think I understand them. And we'll go back and we'll try to come back and address all those at the next meeting.
Yep.
I don't know that we need to reinvent the wheel per se, but I think we can definitely come back with definitive answers to your questions.
I do.
Right, and I don't think you need to reinvent the wheel. You may already have that in place, but I think you need to work with the with your engineer and people in our department and come back with this is planned. This is what we got in place. This is what we're going to do.
Sure.
And I do think Mr. Craig made some good suggestions about, even though we think it's lime and water, that's great. But at the same time, I'd like to know for sure it's lime and water.
We'll have that tested.
Perfect.
Okay. So do we need a motion to table this until we get more information? Or
yes.
That's alternative three. Or four, I'm sorry, up there.
Yeah.
Okay. I move that we adopt alternative four on CUP 0290.6 and table this until more information is provided.
Second.
Second.
And then we need to define what more information. You've got that?
I have protective measures and what's in slurry written down, besides limestone, if anything, testing. And
I have no doubt that if something did happen, you guys would be on it in a heartbeat. But that's part of the story is, you know, too little, too late. Let, you know, be proactive instead of reactive. So I think that's a good way to say it.
Got a motion out of Neubauer, a second out of Youngberg. Roll call vote, please.
Neubauer.
Aye.
Youngberg.
Aye.
McGill.
Aye.
Brecky.
Aye.
Schneider.
Aye.
Okay, moving on, let's go on to our next one. It's variance 0519, Craig Variance, Marcus Hammond. Staff report. Go ahead.
Good evening, board. This in front of you is for a front variance. The applicant and property owner is Andrew Craig, and this property is located at 5038 Skycrest Drive. It is 0.4 miles west of the city of Ames. So this request is for a variance of 31 feet from the 40-foot required front setback for down to 9 feet. An accessory structure will be built here. There was a previous accessory structure that had been granted the variance in 1961. The existing structure is in very poor condition. So 2017, the Craigs bought the property. And when the property was built between 1962 and 1963, but in 1961 they applied for and were granted a variance due to topographical issues of the parcel. It was granted for 10 feet at that time. However, when CGA did a survey in 2011, as well as this year, within the last month or so, came back that the setback was actually 8.1 feet. So whatever happened back in early 60s is kind of having a play in what's happening now, and trying to rebuild this structure. And that's why we're here. So the city map, if this map looks somewhat familiar, it's
pretty close to the mine.
The mine is right there. and so Mr. Craig's property is there. Kind of area map. It's at the end of a cul-de-sac, and right there is the existing accessory structure. So as you can see here, this is based on, right now this image shows beacon, so when you look at that, that looks like that's right on the property line. That has to do with some mapping issues that are inherent that we're seeing. There's your floodplain. It is outside of the floodplain. So this is the CGA, their survey that had been conducted in 2011. You see this corner is 8.34 in this survey, which is that closest point, because right here this says 6.9, but there's a wall that. So you have your structure, and then on the north side of this building, there's a 10-foot wall on the eastern side, and then a 5-foot wall. So that 6.97 is because of that other wall. It's a whole thing there. So this new red line is the actual lines from CGA that they shot. They got these points this year, a couple months ago. That shows truly where the pins are. They set the pins, they did all their, what they do. And it matches what we found when we were out at the site. This is part of these walls that make this whole thing appear to be a lot bigger than it is. And we'll get into a little bit more on the site in a minute. Here's kind of the existing conditions. You can see the garage door actually sits lower than part of this slab because it's settled so badly in the area. And then this side is coming up off of everything. You can actually move that section of the wall there.
You can blow leaves under it.
So looking, this is looking from the cul-de-sac towards this, it's kind of hard to see it. Again, there's the structure, but 15 feet of this structure isn't actually part of the garage. There's these walls that were put onto it. So this is the opposite side of that garage. It's part of the topographical issues of why the initial variance was granted. This all slopes away pretty steeply. And in order to do any work on this side would require a significant amount of fill dirt. So this is where the existing structure is. Looking this way, and on the maps, you'll see that Mr. Craig's going to rotate this at an angle. It's not going to take out this tree, but it's going to come back this way. That'll help to bring it off that property line a little bit further than initially planned. And based on the CGA shots that were done this year, this is 8.1 feet from this corner of the garage to the property line. And then this is 9.8 feet from...
The length is in that.
It's in this box here, so we can blow it up if you'd like to see anything more. There's a wall here. Again, these wing walls have caused a few problems in some of these, the aerials and where this actually sits, but the inner wall is actually here. And then here's the proposed structure. By rotating this away, he's bringing it all off of that property line, with the closest point being 9.1, but that's where the variance request was for 9 feet. And this back point is over 10 feet here.
So he's twisting it away from where it was.
Yeah, so initially it was going to stay, but then after CJ came out and did some shots and we talked a little bit, you know, is there any way we could kind of pull it away?
Okay. Maybe make it a little deeper to make it worthwhile to get some space. So in order to do that, we have to fall away from that cul-de-sac right away. Okay. So it's unused space. It's parallel to the house now, but we can do that. And it's where that rotated structure is pretty flat. So it's not, you know, if we go over to the west behind the cul-de-sac, like even steeper than the picture he showed, we would probably put a small cover between the garage and the house and actually just pour and stamp that. Right now it's just all hostas and those, you saw those stepping stones that are all kind of shifting south. And it just needs work, you know, and we knew that when we bought it. We just didn't think it would be a big deal to rebuild something where it was. I had no clue at that time. So.
All right, so as far as standards of approval, this is for a variance, so we must meet these in total five questions. The land in question cannot yield a reasonable return if used only for the purpose. So all the other homes in the area have these accessory structures, whether they be attached or detached, they all have these two-car garages. If not able to rebuild this structure, the value of the land goes significantly down because it's the only one in the whole area that does not have this amenity that everybody else has access to. And then the plight of the owner is due to unique circumstances. This structure was granted this variance in 1963, or in 1961. It's been here since 1963. This is not something that the Craig family did. They didn't create this situation. They bought the home. This is kind of what they bought into, but there's no decisions that they made that caused these things to happen. And they're just trying to really bring up and match the rest of the neighborhood. The use will not alter the essential character locality. So in that cul-de-sac, there are four homes that share that cul-de-sac. Three of the four have variances for their front setbacks. So it's pretty much within the character almost of the cul-de-sac to have this variance to be this close to the right-of-way. Because of the tough, it all falls away from basically that cul-de-sac. So granting the variance will not be contrary to public's interest. Again, this is, it's going to be shifted a little bit further away from where the existing variance was granted to. It's not going to encroach any further. Mr. Craig is going to keep all the mature trees that are in the right-of-way there during construction. And spirit and intent, it's designated as residential. We're not trying to change what's happening there. He's trying to rebuild a structure that's falling down. There's questions that we went through throughout this whole process. Mr. Craig has been very diligent in providing us with the information that we've requested. We worked to get these shots from CGA and then going out there to measure. Anything that's been asked, we've gotten answers to. So some points to consider. It's necessary to place a structure that's in poor condition. It'll actually appear smaller than what the existing structure looks like. Other dwellings have also have variances for their setbacks. The accessory structure will continue to be separated by the roads from the existing trees that are there. There's very, very minimal traffic. It's one of those, it's at the dead end of the cul-de-sac. Iowa DOT doesn't even provide us with numbers there. The cost of building it somewhere else on the property would be substantially greater due to the need for fill. The neighbors have provided support. We have six neighbors signed a letter. I got another email this morning from another neighbor in support. The neighbors here in person in support of this request. It's kind of hard to see, but there's six signatures from different neighbors, and then the email.
Six closest.
Yeah, the six closest there. There.
Yeah, I have no concern to do what you want. That was the response.
And then I just added these again at the end because I figured once we got here, you're either going to have questions and basically going to come to this, or you're not going to have any questions and we'll be at this point where our recommended conditions are that those existing significant trees that are there that separate the road right away, or the road and the existing building, that they will stay intact throughout this process, and that the property line will be clearly identified, which he has clearly identified, and that it'll be marked when we come out there for our inspections. Mr. Craig is in support of these conditions that we placed. So there are your alternatives, with staff recommending option two, which is as put forward with those conditions for that front setback of 9 feet, the variance for the front setback down to 9 feet. And if Ford has any questions
for staff, any questions for Mr. Roth, Mr. Craig? I will entertain a motion.
Bobby, do you want to say anything? Bobby Nordheim's a neighbor. She came on her own accord. I had no idea she was coming, but obviously she's supporting it.
I'll make a motion to accept number two, alternative number two.
One second. Okay, we have it.
Which one of them? We'll they're going to fight about it.
we'll go with that one. We have a motion and a second. Roll call vote.
Youngberg.
Aye.
Schneider.
Aye.
Neubauer.
Aye.
Brecky.
Aye.
McGill.
Aye. Good. There you go.
Awesome.
Yeah. You're putting it back farther than
a little bit.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Yeah.
And the variance had already been granted several years ago. The lines got.
Yeah, we just had to figure out where it actually existed.
That was
according, you know, first I was looking at the GIS and I was like, It was on the ground.
At first, I was like, there's no way they're going to approve anything.
Yeah.
Like, this is,
he was
so
very diligent in
this
whole process, and Marcus did a great job.
Good.
And so, yeah, now you have kind of an example of how that GIS shapefile might need to be looked
at. Yeah.
It's kind of stretched there.
How far do you have to raise it up?
That slab is, it's just, are you talking about?
Yeah.
We're going to take that whole thing out and level it out. We're probably going to pour all the way to the house and do a little stamp work there. I mean, maybe cover it so we have a little covered entrance, you know. The house is in good shape, the garage, like daylight's all around that side where the slab broke. We were, I mean, the market is so quick. We were in Iowa City, and it was like, there's an acre, we can afford it, we got to buy it. Who cares about this garage? We'll fix it later. Yeah.
It won't be.
And then it was like, surprise.
Okay.
Not that easy, but thank you very much.
We've got another one in front of us, though.
Yep.
We have CUP 1019. Okay.
Thank you.
All right, you bet.
Yeah.
All right, so the CUP is for the Integrated Roadside Vegetation Management Addition. Joe was unable to be here tonight, so but he's the one that applied for this. He also was very diligent. Any questions we had, he did really good mapping for us and whatnot, so we'll get into this. So the request is for the construction of a 40x40 addition onto the existing building. The existing building is 40x40. When they first built it, it was going to be 40x80. It's just at the time they couldn't pull that off, so it got cut in half. It's already on Story County property, and it will replace a building that was 50x50 and was destroyed in 2017. So this is the site of the current shop for the IRVM. They store seed there. They work on their vehicles there. Any maintenance vehicles that they use for, they do. There'll be cold storage. This will also house an 8x10 herbicide storage case for liquid and granular herbicide. They're storing in another building right now. We'll see what that looks like and why it's better than it'll be inside. This will match the existing structure in height, size, and color material. So if anyone's familiar, it's kind of northwest of Nevada. The sheriff's shooting range is also located on the site. This is the shooting range, and then the rest of this is IRVM's area. So this aerial is old. This is the 50x50 that was destroyed in 2017. They're proposing now to add on right here. And it is outside of the floodplain. A little bit of it gets there, but so here's a site plan that they produced for us. This is the existing structure, and then this will be the addition. Right here is a bathroom facility that anyone that's on the property has access to. Everything else is locked up for IRVM. Aerial. They are going to add an ADA spot right there. So standing kind of at the site looking north towards the street is out there. East, this will be moved, and you'll see on the site plan later on, this garbage can to another location. This building was built by volunteers. This will be taken down and won't be used anymore. Looking south towards the shooting range. And then, so this building right here currently holds their liquid and granular herbicide. So once this building is constructed, all of this will be in a far more secure on leak or spill-proof flooring and stuff like that. So it's the existing building, so it's just that. It'd be doubled once it's completed. Natural prairie, so there's 3 acres, which will accommodate for their 20% and a lot of their impervious surface amount. That's all 3 acres of natural prairie area that they've reseeded. This is from 210th Street looking up towards IRVM. That's just the corner of the existing building, and this will be behind it, so you wouldn't see it at all. This is an aerial that they provided for us, showing the entire overview. If you have any questions about anything there, you can answer that. Otherwise, we'll keep going. And the standards of approval compatibility, it's going to look exactly like the existing building, just an addition onto it, matches the rest of it. It's already county-owned property. All setback requirements are met. It will not interfere with any development in the area. As far as transition, it meets all the setbacks. The closest setback is 337 feet, or closest parcel line. And from the street, you're not able to see anything. There's a lot of that natural areas kind of buffer it, and there's tree growth there. After construction, there's no anticipated extra traffic. On average, there's 5 trips to the site, which is skewed a little bit because during summer, they're more active than they are in the winter because you're not doing as much with that, like putting down herbicide and stuff like that. During construction, all the parking will be off of the and out of the right-of-way. There'll be a total of 4 parking spaces after construction is completed, and with one of those being ADA with a marker, they're going to put a new concrete down for that. There's no new proposed signage for the addition. There are signs that have to be there that are currently on the other building that have to meet the NFPA and OSHA regulations due to the herbicide that they have. The lighting of the addition will consist of 1 exterior light for the overhead door and will conform to the lighting standards of 8809 and 90.04. There's likely going to be a very, very limited environmental impact. All chemicals will now be stored inside in a much more secure way, so it's good for everyone, and it's not going to be located in the floodplain. And then the analysis, the board concludes that all of these will be met. The board must issue or recommend approval. If you have any questions about the questions we asked them through our routing and whatnot.
Public notice. Just for my own curiosity, what happened to the prior building? You said it was destroyed?
Yeah, there was a storm in 2017, just ripped it down. Yeah, it didn't, straight wind hit it, and so their stuff has been, as much as they could store in the other one, they've been storing, but a lot of their stuff has just been out in the elements for the last 2 years. So, Planning and Zoning Commission didn't have any comments. They approve or recommended moving it along to you. Environmental health's comment was to not drive on any laterals. They address their need. It's not likely to affect any neighboring properties, and it will match the existing building. And they're replacing a larger building with something smaller. So, planning, they recommended 5-0. And if you guys agree, staff and planning and zoning are recommending approval as put forth.
Any questions?
Which is the first item, yeah.
Not, I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to accept number 1, accept their application for CUP 1019 as submitted.
Motion, do I have a second?
Second.
Motion and second. All in favor, roll call vote.
Neubauer.
Aye.
Brecke.
Aye.
Schneider.
Aye.
Youngberg.
Aye.
McGill.
Aye.
There it goes.
Okay.
Okay.
Do you have questions?
No, she wanted to do the motion.
I said I had to bite my tongue because I feel like I'm always bringing up motions. I like to say so moved.
Okay, any other comments to the board?
I have some information. First of all, I don't know if you met Sandra King. She's my supervisor. She was here at the last Board of Adjustment meeting.
Nice to meet you.
She started in November. She serves the Board of Supervisors but has oversight responsibilities for my position at Planning and Development, the County Engineer, Animal Control Director, Veterans Affairs, and Community Services.
I thought she was a reporter.
Oh, no. Sorry.
Better behave.
Sorry. So she's trying to, you know, learn what our department does, and so we're happy that she's able to join us this evening. Is there anything you want to add or say?
Just glad to be here.
As far as cases, we're going to have a couple of conditional use permits for sure in January. It'll be the January 15th.
Yes, and possibly another variance.
Okay.
So one of them is going to be another project that will involve a county department, animal control department, is adding a building to temporarily house, like, livestock. They have a makeshift facility that they use that's located on the west side of their site that is not adequate enough, so they're proposing that. We're going to be hearing from Ballard Golf and Country Club. They submitted a zoning permit for a building, and through our review, we realized that the actual use is legal but non-conforming. We have a permit that was issued for the clubhouse, for the golf course facility, for the work that was done to make the dam and the pond. That was back in 1974. But a few years later, I think in 77. In the late 70s, the ordinance changed, and so the status of that use is non-conforming. So we're going to be taking them through a process to get current with a conditional use permit. We've got four, possibly five buildings that need to be addressed, existing buildings, in addition to the clubhouse.
And the new proposed building,
which is going to be located on the southwest part of the site. It's just right there where the access is.
Two of those buildings will require variance.
So were the buildings legal when they put them up?
Well, there's no record of a zoning permit. So part of our review is, you know, we've had conceptual review. We've asked the question. We've told them about the records that we don't have, and we invite them to submit any records that they might have. But so this is going to be kind of a discovery process that we're going to go through.
Okay.
With them to get them current, and so you'll have that. It's budget time, so we've got monies in our department's budget for training that Iowa State Extension is offering for Board of Adjustment members, for Planning and Zoning Commission members. They usually offer that in the spring. We'll make sure that we get information out to individuals who are interested to attend that. We had our annual work program session with our Planning and Zoning Commission and the Board of Supervisors. I won't go through all of that, but we've got a few things that we're going to be looking into. One thing is an exploratory measure to look into what similar-sized counties have adopted building codes. For the new member this evening, Story County does not have adopted building codes. We don't have a code that deals with structural, mechanical, so heating and cooling requirements, plumbing, electrical. Right now, we refer people to the State Fire Marshal's Office, Department of Public Safety, to determine whether or not a permit is needed for electrical work and on-site inspections. So we're going to be doing a study to find out, again, what similar-sized counties have adopted building codes. We're going to look at counties cities in the county, adjacent counties, look at cost-benefit analysis, and share that information with the Planning and Zoning Commission, and then ultimately the Board of Supervisors. Another thing that we're going to be looking at is, right now, through some of these practices, like the project that Marcus talked about. You know, we often get applications in from cities, from state agencies, and we are charging fees, so we want to see what other departments are doing with regard to whether or not they charge and collect fees, because that's something that we're doing, and so we want to know, you know, what other departments in the county think about that. So that'll be a measure that will go before P&Z and Board of Supervisors. And the last thing that we've started is the program that the board supported through our last budget cycle, and that's CitizenServe. That's going to be our software that we're going to use for the general public to access and submit zoning permits, development case applications, and we just started our process with the consultants on that. And we're very, very excited to be at this stage. We're probably a few months out to being able to say that we're close to being ready to go live, but internally we're participating in meetings with the consultant on that. So that's what I have for you. I'd be happy to answer any questions on any of that.
Sounds busy.
Yeah. I see you writing down some notes.
I'm sorry, I had to stay over there.
No, it's not a problem.
I had hip surgery in July, so yeah,
I got to do what we need.
And then we have a new member, so I don't know if she wants to shed some light on her background. Yeah. And
tell us a little bit about yourself at Spotlight Time.
All right. Well, I'm Wendy, and I have been living in areas around Nevada for about 10 years now. I was up in Milford Township, and now down in Nevada Township, and by profession, I'm a historian, but I'm interested in the history of land use, so this is all fascinating. This is also my first government experience, so please be patient.
Thanks for volunteering.
Yes. Would the rest of you mind just sharing a little bit about your background for her benefit?
Sure. I am Matt Neubauer. And I live kind of over by the gravel pit, actually.
Okay.
And I've been in the area for roughly 10 years. I help people determine if they want to sell their business to an ESOP for principal financial group in Des Moines.
Steve McGill. I live south of Nevada, down near the golf course. Been in town approximately 21 years. President of State Bank and Trust here in Nevada. Been on the board here probably 7 years. I'm in my second term. I've got to the point, you know, when you see certain ones that out there, they're going to be lengthy. You know, you've seen enough of those. My kids, I've got two children. One of them's in Marshalltown with two grandchildren. I got one over in Huxley, and she teaches for Iowa State University. My wife teaches for Iowa State University. I'm the oddball. I wasn't a teacher. My son's a teacher also. So.
I'm Karen Youngberg, and obviously this is my exit, but I came to Iowa State in 1974, and so I've been here since. Never left the place, but my husband and I started a business venture called Ames Silversmithing when we were 19, and we've been in downtown Ames ever since. And I have two sons, and they're well vested in the business, and so we're just kind of that mom and pop operation. And I love Story County, and this was, you know, I always believe you should give back. So, like you, this was my civic duty calling, so to speak. And Rick Sanders cornered me and said, "We need to." I said, "Sure." So, but anyway, so I'll miss you all, and the meetings were always very interesting and organized.
You
so
always
I appreciate
had
that.
Very good questions. We appreciate that.
So anyway.
So Randy, live west of town, just a short distance, kind of between Ames and Nevada on Lincoln Highway. Been there approximately 56 years, and just wiggled around a little. I farm a small amount and work full-time as a facilities manager at Cornerstone Church. And my wife and I are excited to have 7 grandkids and 1 on the way.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
Should I make a motion
to
adjourn?
Absolutely.
Let
her.
I move to adjourn.
Well, here's a second.
Second.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Question for you, Jerry.
Yes.
With Karen, since